Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I would like here to propose that the year 2011 be proclaimed the year of nuclear disarmament and nuclear energy for all, nuclear weapons for none. After about 100 years of domination, the capitalist system and existing world order are unable to provide appropriate solutions to the problems that society faces. Thus, their demise has arrived.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Hitler is alive and well. He's in New York City being protected by the Secret Service, being feted by Maya Dimberg, and will soon be interviewed by Schlepp Smith of Fox News Network. And the world goes on. I sit here actually with a heavy heart, not believing I'm living in a world where they let a Hitler come back and fed him and protect him and listen to him and let him speak at the UN. But then again, the world I live in is not the world I grew up in. The world I live in is not the world I want to live in. The world I live in is not the one that I would live in if I had any power. And that's the world that we live in. That's the news of the day. Good night and good luck. This is Michael Savage signing off. Now, what if I could switch my radio show to 30 seconds to a minute a day? That wouldn't be bad because actually I said all I want to say truthfully today. I am going to say a lot more, but there's no bigger news than the fact that Hitler has arrived. And he's being protected by Barack Obama, the United Nations, and by Mayor Dimberg's security apparatus in New York City. And as I say yesterday, flap less and coast more, which is my new motto. Flap less and coast more. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I have no question for you. There's absolutely no question that I have for my audience, because today is going to be a day that I'm going to talk a little bit about the news, a little bit about my views, a little bit about my reviews, and a lot about health and nutrition, because yesterday, as promised, I have a very important study on the relative risks and benefits of a vegetarian diet. And the reason I'm doing this is simple. Bill Clinton, for whatever his pluses or minuses, and I think they're mostly minuses from my point of view, although in retrospect, is now suddenly embracing the all plant-based diet as though it's the Holy Grail and he just discovered it. The fact is that this has been well known for a long time. It's pushed primarily by a shyster on a houseboat in Sausalito, California, who is a well-known left-wing apparatchik. And now Bill Clinton thinks that if he shifts from cheeseburgers and simply eat, well, listen to him.
I went on essentially a plant-based diet. I live on beans, legumes, vegetables, fruit. I drink a protein supplement every morning. No dairy. I drink almond milk mixed in with fruit and a protein powder, so I get the protein for the day when I start the day out. And it changes.
Okay, we got enough already. So now he's a health food fanatic. And, you know, like all new converts, they believe they've discovered something that no one else ever heard of, number one. And they believe, in this case, Bill Clinton believes, it's the cure-all for every problem, not only that he's ever had physically, but for the entire West. Would that be true, I wouldn't even be talking about it. And would that be true, I wouldn't have to talk about it, because it's not true. I want to remind you again, without boasting, that I'm the only person in the American media who knows as much about nutrition as anybody, perhaps more. And it goes back a long time. I earned my PhD in human nutrition and epidemiology from the University of California, Berkeley in 1978. Does that make me the world's most brilliant man on the subject? No, but I've written a lot of books on health and nutrition. I have seen people embrace vegetarian diets and drop dead of heart attacks in their 30s. I've seen runners running and eating vegetarian diets and drop dead of heart attacks in their 30s. And so there is no general information that you can derive from this crackpot in Sausalito who has now sold his bill of goods to Bill Clinton. I would think Bill Clinton would be cynical enough to not embrace this, you know, as heartily as he did. Now, having given you my editorial on the subject, I'm only opening up to the fact that I'm going to read you an article later that we dug up. My good friend found it for me. Remember I mentioned to you the Indian Railway study going back to 1967? It was one of the finest epidemiological studies of heart disease I've ever seen done. And it was done long before the quacks started taking these payoffs from the drug companies to push Pravacol, Lipitor, and the other very dangerous muscle-killing drugs that many of you are on and you think is also the Holy Grail. Let me tell you something. When I read you parts of this article by Mr. Dr. Malhotra, goes back to 1967, Epidemiology of Heart Disease in India with Special Reference to Causation, you're not going to believe what you're going to hear. And the reason I'm going to bother taking extractions from this article for you on the epidemiology of heart disease is because I think it's one of the most important studies ever done on heart disease that should be widely discussed and isn't. And the reason it isn't is that you can't sell products based upon what Dr. Malhotra discovered when he studied these thousands upon thousands of railway workers in India and their mortality from heart disease. And I can't do the whole thing in 2 seconds. It's going to take me a long while to get through this. But I want to summarize it for you. The fact is that the geographic differential in heart attacks in India at that time was clearly divided between the north and the south of India. All the other variables were corrected for. The highest mortality from heart attacks was in the southern part of India, which was at 135 heart attacks per 100,000 in the south of India. And the lowest were in the north of India, north and western and northeastern zones, at 20, 25, and 33 per 100,000. That's a huge difference. It's a five-year mortality study. It's based on a monster number of people, so it's a very good epidemiological study. And you're going to be shocked to find out, as I read you from this study, you're not going to believe this, that whether or not the person had a physical job or sat on their behind didn't matter. In other words, the physical activity level had no effect whatsoever on the mortality with regard to heart disease. Did you know that? I bet you never heard any of that. Many of you believe that there's an association between high-fat diets and heart disease. This study has nothing to support that. In fact, you're not going to believe this. In the north of India, the fats that were consumed, mainly animal fats, was 19 times higher than that of the south, and the disease is 7 times lower in the north than in the south. It's the exact opposite of what you are being taught by the pharmaceutical medical establishment, which is pushing dangerous, muscle-damaging, and liver-attacking drugs. Okay? So let me go on. Again, many of you have given up all animal fats. You've given up milk. You run like crazy. And you do other things that you hope will make you healthier and you will live longer. Unfortunately, according to this large epidemiological study, that's not true. So you say, well, where does that leave me? What should I do? Just eat the corned beef and cabbage and smoke? No, not on the contrary. There's an awful lot that I can tell you today about a low incidence of heart disease in the north and a high incidence of heart disease in the south in India at that time, as it relates to the type of foods that they eat, and what the culprit really is, you're not going to believe. I'll give it to you slowly but surely here on the Savage Nation. I can't do it all at once. I think I've given you a good overview. I think that most every person listening to this show, whether they're a liberal or a conservative, well, it doesn't matter what your race is. Everyone thinks about their mortality from time to time, perhaps some more than others. Some are cardioneurotics who think about dropping dead, you know, every 2 seconds. They think they're getting a heart attack. Every indigestion, they're ready to pull over and call 911. But you can't suddenly embrace what Bill Clinton just told you as the Holy Grail for one reason. It's not true. That's all. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We're talking about politics, and then we're talking about health and nutrition. And don't think that they're not interrelated. I'm going to read some things to you. You tell me who said this. Are you ready for this? He said, one may regret living at a period when it's impossible to form an idea of the shape of the world of the future. But there's one thing I can predict to eaters of meat. The world of the future will be vegetarian. He then said, the only thing of which I shall be incapable is to share the sheik's mutton with them. I'm a vegetarian, and they must spare me from their meat. And this man ate raw vegetables, fruit, grains. He did not like to go to slaughterhouses. He had a pity for animals. He is a lifelong vegetarian. He is, of course, a meatless eater. He ate vegetarian dishes. He also, by the way, was a non-drinker and a non-smoker. And his name was Adolf Hitler. Now, I'm not suggesting that all vegetarians who don't smoke and don't drink are fascists, but I'm warning you that the sanctimony coming out of the left wing is largely derived from their assumption that by not eating meat and not smoking and not drinking alcohol, somehow they have a higher consciousness. Well, I would beg to differ with you in that if you wish not to eat meat and you wish not to smoke or drink, good luck to you. But please don't assume it makes you a morally superior person. As evidenced by the personal life of Adolf Hitler as opposed to his political life. By the way, Hitler also disapproved of cosmetics since they contained animal byproducts. I don't know if you knew any of this. And the reason he wouldn't eat meat is because it meant the death of a living creature. He refused to have so much as a rabbit or a trout sacrificed to provide his food. He would allow only eggs on his table because egg laying meant that the hen had been spared rather than killed. And yet this vicious psychotic, killed millions and millions of Jews and millions of opponents without so much as blinking an eye. So what does that tell you about food? Nothing. What would you like to talk about? The Hitler of our time being allowed to come to New York? And that, of course, would be Ahmadinejad, if you don't want to talk about the nutrition. Do you want to talk about Obama's narcissism and egomania going to the UN saying that he saved the world, that the world is now safe for theocracy or Obamaocracy, because there's no sense to what he is saying. Would you like to talk about, I don't know, what do you want to talk about? Nothing. There's no news. There's no news. There's no news. There's plenty of news. You just don't want to. I think people are burned out, frankly. You're not interested in Hitler. You're not interested in vegetarianism. You're not interested in Hitler coming to New York. You're not interested in my reading to you from the study by Malhotra on heart disease. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go to 1-800-449-8255, and I'll see what you're interested in. Phone number is Michael Savage. I mean, that's michaelsavage.com. I don't know what you want to talk about. It's a talk show. I can impose my will on you and talk about the news, but I don't think any of this matters. Are you burned out? I notice nobody is calling about the contract on America, whatever they're calling it now, the new gimmick of the Republicans. It all sounds good. A lot of it was lifted from Tea Party's. A lot of it lifted from my new book, Trickle Up Poverty, directly. But do you notice that none of what's in the Republican plan, there's nothing about social issues in it? I have to keep harping on you. You know, I got to tell you again, over and over again, how come they don't mention one word about abortion? How come they don't mention one word about English only? How come they don't mention one word about upholding our culture in any way? Because they're part and parcel of the same problem that we're all facing, which is a meltdown of our national identity. I have articulated this through many books and many shows. You know, my motto is borders, language, culture. The Republicans don't believe in borders. They don't believe in the English language. They don't believe in our culture. They believe in a different fiscal relationship than Obama, and good luck to them on that. But certainly a nation is more than its fiscal realities, is it not? Or am I wrong? Why am I the only one? I'm going to tell you something else. You want to hear this one now? I'm sorry, it's weeks before the book is out. I know that Pinhead just put one out. I mean, Anti-Pinhead just put a book out. And Anti-Pinhead's book has nothing about the culture in it. Anti-Pinhead's book is written for those who think they're superior to the liberal. I guess he's pandering to them. He's doing well, and God bless him. There's room for all of us. I am the only author who took a chance. I include a whole thing on limiting abortion because it's infanticide. You know what people said to me after they saw this manuscript? How dare you put that in there? You're going to destroy your sales. You can't put that in there because no one cares about it. Do you believe that I'm the only one left in America who actually thinks that late-term abortion is infanticide? I can't be the only one. And yet you never hear it discussed. I don't want you to call on abortion because I know many of you are passionate about it, but you haven't heard anything about it. When have you last heard a discussion about English only? For God's sakes, you live in the United States of America. Do you think that the French, being as liberal as the French society is, do you think they would be as foolish as we are to put ballots in many languages? No, it's either you read French or you don't vote. It's as simple as that. Here we have in San Francisco alone a ballot with 8 or 9 languages on it. What do you think that's about? That's to make certain that as many illegal aliens as possible can vote for Barbara Boxer and any Tusum Newsom. And that's the way the country has been destroyed. It's been destroyed from within by the devious radical left wing, primarily the ones now running the country, who are possibly the most devious gang that the American people have ever had to put up with. The only reason they haven't gone any further is because they can't get away with it. Because I can guarantee you, if Nancy Pelosi could get away with it, I wouldn't be on the radio. I can guarantee you, if Nancy Pelosi could get away with it, a lot worse would be happening in this country. Miss Hammer. And she's just a front, by the way, for the Obama crowd. Now, you know all of this, so I don't have to talk about it. But where are the leaders to talk about all these other important issues? Tell me where they are. Sandy in San Diego, you're up. It's open mic to Mike Monday on the Savage Nation, even though it's Thursday. What's on your mind?
Michael, how are you doing? I'd just like to say that I am a bit of a liberal libertarian, which is a bit of an oxymoron, but I wanted to really congratulate you on being, how do I say this, an unbiased conservative. You don't pull the party line like the wall banger and the rest of the idiots do. I really love your show. I work on boats. I'm a marine technician. I really like the way that...
You work on boats. I was in my engine room today. It's amazing, the technology of the West. Every time I go in the engine room of my boat or even run an outboard motor, I marvel at our civilization. I marvel at the advancement, the advancements built one upon the other, the genius of Western man.
Savage.
So a lot of people are calling. They want to hear more about that big study from India that was done in 1967, because I think it's one of the most important epidemiological studies about heart disease. And it's been ignored, number one, and then it's been suppressed, number two, because there's no medicine that you can sell related to what was discovered here. That's the funny part. Most of the studies that get funded are studies that will result in a result, that will produce a result, that will have the drug companies able to produce a product around the result. Let's put it to you that way. Like, if you're missing this, then you have to buy that, or you have too much of that, this will reduce that. But this has very little to do with that. And that's why you didn't hear about it. I remember when, I earned my PhD in 1978. And I went into nutrition because my dad had died of a heart attack in 1970. I never met my grandfather. He had died at 47. My father died at 57. And it was like tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, you know. I'm not the only one in America who has early death from heart disease in his family. And so I said, there's got to be something. This is not normal. It's not a normal occurrence for men to die so young from heart disease. Now, I know that both of these men worked very hard. My grandfather was an immigrant to America who had to leave his family behind in Europe, earn enough money 7 years here to send over to get my grandmother and the children here. And they smoked, you know, repeatedly, incessantly rather. He owned a tailor store, he made fine suits, and he died. I figured my father, being brought here at age of 7, would live longer, and he did by 10 years. So to me, each day that I have personally is a miracle. Just to be honest with you, because we don't know, you know, I don't want to sit here and start tempting fate, but do we really know? I mean, as healthy as we are. I remember when I was a kid, I read a comic book. So it showed a weightlifter, a strong man, as it were, with big muscles, and he felt he was the strongest man in the world, and nobody could beat him up. It was a comic, remember? So he could beat everybody up, this comic strip character. Now, I don't know who wrote this. It was genius. But then it showed he got sick from one little bug that he couldn't even see, a virus. He got sick and got weak. He got weaker than the weakest guy he had ever pushed around. And then he died. I don't know what the final bubble panel in the cartoon said, but you got, as a kid, it really impressed me. That no matter how strong you are, a simple microbe can wipe you off the planet. Okay? So that's to start with. You got to be humble to begin with. And, you know, I got to keep repeating something I learned in graduate school that is very little understood, little often never repeated. About one third of all disease on the earth is related to environmental factors, meaning when I say environment, that means whether your air's, water's, and places, as Aristotle put it. What's in the air? What's in the water? What's in the food? What is in your environment? Did you inhale? Did you live near a refinery? Were you a chimney sweep? Obviously, you went up and down chimneys because they died very often from scrotal cancer. I don't know if you know that. You want to talk about direct environmental relationship to disease? There's one. That was the classic one we studied in graduate school. Chimney sweeps in England. They were often young boys and very small, so they can go into chimneys and, you know, sweep out the carbon. And they often died very young from scrotal cancer because of, obviously, the contact through the clothing even. That's how toxic the fumes are from fireplaces, my good friends in all of the liberal counties that just love your fire so much. You're killing yourself and everyone around you as you are with your barbecues, but don't get me started on my favorite topic. So when I say one third of all illness is related to the environment, that's what I'm talking about. Generally, what you eat, what you drink, what you don't eat, what you don't drink. Is your water contaminated, obviously? There's a common sense. Anyone knows this after a certain point. One third of disease is related to genetics. You have no control over it whatsoever. Maybe more than a third in some cases. In some congenital disorders, there's more than a third, and you can't do anything about it. And then there's another factor in all disease that's called the unknown. And I learned that again, shockingly, because when you're young, you want to believe in absolutes. So here I was, this young buck in graduate school. I had published already 6 books. I had 2 master's degrees. I had my own family. I was a mature adult. I wasn't just one of these kids going to school for no reason. And I thought I could find the answer to everything. And my professor was a pretty wise man. And he said to me, he was a medical doctor who said, look, he said, I want to tell you, he said, I perform many an autopsy on men who died of heart attacks. And when we opened them up, he said, their arteries were as clear as a baby's. So that, like, oh my God, what's that about? What do I do with this information? So what would have triggered the heart attack? Well, I'll let you figure it out. Let's talk about those unknown factors. Can you control for them? You better learn how to control for them, because you could be the biggest vegetarian in the world, but if you're going to be a nervous wreck where everything bothers you, everything affects you, you're not going to do too well and you're not going to last too long. Now, having said that, there's another interesting something around that I want to mention. I'm a thoughtful person. I have been burdened with the worries of the world since I'm 5 years old. The older men used to look at me and puzzle, like, how come he's talking about nuclear weapons? He's 5 years old in the Bronx. They didn't know what was wrong with me. What? Because I remember the atomic bomb went off whenever it was tested. And I ran down the street screaming, the world is coming to an end. The world is coming to an end. So they thought I was nuts. Ever since I've been a child, I've been afraid of the end of the world because of nuclear war. Incidentally, I was traumatized by this. For some reason, it affected me very deeply. And I was obsessed with this as a child. But the fact is, as I learned later on in life, is that you could actually be worried about things, and you could even think deeply about things, and you could even have things in your mind all the time about the world or about your family, about your business. But if you don't internalize them, if you don't internalize those worries, you're actually going to bypass the disease related to so-called stress. It's a psychological trick that healthy people learn how to engage in. Meaning, you could be in the stock market all day long screaming your head off, buying and selling. But if you don't internalize that stress, and there's a way to do it, you're going to live much longer than if you go home and your heart's pounding from it. So I don't know how to explain that to you. That's something you're going to have to learn how to do. Maybe you can think back to when you were a young boy, if you're a man, and you made your first phone calls for dates. Do you remember those calls? Did any of you remember those calls when you were 14 years old? How you would sit there with your hand shaking out of fear that the girl would say no to you for Friday night? Do you remember sitting and staring at the phone, afraid to dial the phone because if she answered and her voice was a little too forceful, you might hang up? Do you remember those days? Well, then eventually you learn how to make a call like it was nothing, right? Hey, how you doing? You want to go out Saturday? You know what I'm saying? Same thing. You don't have to shake every time you get involved in a difficult situation. You can learn to let it go through you, around you. like it's a passing cloud. But that's something for a philosopher to deal with, or a psychologist, not for me. I'd rather deal with the epidemiology of heart disease in India, with special reference to causation, particularly the study from by Malhotra from 1967. Chicago, Candace, welcome to the program.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having this study. I just called my dad as soon as the program came on to tell him he had to listen. Because this year he had a heart scare. He was vacuuming, and he had, his heart started racing. And it was the second time it had happened in 2 years, and it scared my mom, and he ended up going to the hospital, and then they couldn't find anything.
Right. And how old is he? I'm not going to diagnose or treat, but I'm going to tell you something very interesting. How old is he?
He is 74.
Mm-hmm. So he's never had these palpitations before?
He had them once before, and the doctor said it was nothing before.
Well, that's because the doctor doesn't know anything about mineral imbalance. Let me give you a little hint right away. The relationship between a racing heart or palpitations and magnesium deficiency or potassium deficiency is well established in literature. And yet I guarantee you that not one out of 10,000 medical doctors in this country know anything about that.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yes, so look into foods rich in magnesium, foods rich in potassium. And by the way, does your father eat a lot of salty foods?
No, he does not, but he also has type 2 diabetes.
But look, again, we're going to get too deeply into his case study, and I'm not a physician, so I don't want to get into it. But again, let me go back. In most cases, we don't know what may cause. Sometimes a scare can cause palpitations. But in some cases, and not that infrequently, magnesium or potassium-rich foods can completely stabilize the palpitations or the racing heart situation. Okay, thank you for the call. People don't realize this. I never heard of that before. Where'd that quackery come from? That's some kind of right-wing stuff. I'm a big pot smoker, and I listen to Bill Markowitz, and we don't believe in that stuff. Well, do what you want. Keep smoking dope. What do I care what you do? You do what you want. I don't care. It's a free country. Don't listen to a word I say. You can go for all the shibboleths of the left and think you're going to survive. Good for you. What's interesting to me is back in the 50s when I was a mere lad, you know who were you know which side of the aisle was obsessed with clean water? The right wing. It was the right wing that was obsessed with not putting fluoride in the water. Did you know that? Now, I can discuss that on another show. I'm not going to do that today. But there's some good evidence that fluoride is a massively toxic chemical that has no place in our water supplies whatsoever. There's no question that fluoride reduces the risk of cavities. But there's also no question that fluoride induces a high number of cancers in the population. And your municipal water manufacturers wouldn't tell you that. But I'm talking politics now. It was the right wingers who were obsessed with a clean environment. The liberals were not interested in this. The left wing was interested in other things, bringing about world communism, whatever, sex, drugs, rock and roll. They weren't interested in these things. It was the right wing that was obsessed with clean air and clean water and clean food. I remember that. I remember it. I remember who was pushing it at the time. And I was a kid. I didn't even associate it with politics. I just knew that they were like, oh, these are these hard-nosed, you know, kind of tough guys. They're interested in clean air and clean water, like a John Wayne. Well, guess what? They were right. And speaking of politics for a minute, again, I'm moving back and forth. A thought occurred to me last night as I drifted off or when I woke up. You know the years that Russia was a communist, pure communist state? I remember there were arguments that the reason communism had failed, you know, the famous pictures of one salami in a butcher store in Poland with a line around the block to buy the meager, supplies in the store. The reason we heard communism failed was not because it was inherently a failed economic system, but the liberals, in particular the college dopes, would argue that the reason the Soviet Union failed was because the capitalist system had prevented it from working. We interfered with their beautiful system. And then it occurred to me that Obama, being the lifelong Marxist that he is being protected by the very same idea. That the reason Obama's failures are not being accepted as failures by the radical left, particularly the college schmucks, is they're saying, oh, God, he had such good ideas. If only the rabid right wing would have let his plans take effect, why we wouldn't be in the trouble we're in today. It's almost identical. Same exact stupid, illogical arguments, if you want to call them that. I wouldn't even dignify them with the word argument, saying that Obama's genius is Obamanomics, are such brilliance that if only the radical right had let all of them take place, we'd be living in a healthier, more financially stable world. Can you believe this? Huh. Well, that's what's going on. And so that proves sort of in another way that I'm right when I say that Obama's a lifelong Marxist. He doesn't have to walk around saying, I'm a Marxist. He may not even know what he is. Many of them don't even know what they are, incidentally. It is so ingrained in them from their years of talking to each other, getting the BS from each other in the colleges. They don't even know what they are. They don't know what they are. They just think they're better than everybody else. So, you know, there's a statement. The absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. And I concluded my book, Trickle Up Poverty, with that. Because some people won't accept some of the things I put forward in the book about, you know, Obama's lifelong Marxism and things of that nature. And I concluded with that line, which, of course, I didn't invent, but I found it. And I thought it was brilliant. And it applies to Obama. The absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Look, I don't have to. I'm going to get to the study. Many people calling saying, so give it to us already. What's in the study from India so I can make some conclusions out of it myself? And I will. Give me a little time to develop it. I'll do it probably in the next hour. But I want to jump to children for a minute, because on page 105 of Healing Children Naturally, look what I wrote back in 1981. Cholesterol not a danger for most children. I'll read it to you. Fats and cholesterol. Meat is also a source of cholesterol as well as of saturated fats, which when eaten in excessive quantities can cause the liver to produce more cholesterol. This complex chemical is necessary for many important bodily functions. It is only when excess amounts of cholesterol are consumed in the food, with accompanying excess levels of cholesterol in the blood, that the risk of atherosclerotic heart disease is increased. But now there's more to this point that I'll get to in a minute. I'll read you something else, because many of you are starving your children to death. You're putting them on no-fat or low-fat diets. Your children are nervous. Your children are anxious. Your children can't focus in school. And then you're going to some quack who's telling you that they have ADD or ADHD. And that's, in some regard, related to the thin diets you put them on. I go on page 107. We have already noted that egg yolks and butterfat are other important foods that are high in cholesterol. For most children, there is no need for concern about eating reasonable quantities of these nutritious foods. However, we should repeat our earlier caution that special dietary restrictions may be appropriate in families with strong histories of hyperlipidemia. So there's a lot more to this cholesterol story than meets the eye. But let me jump cut now to the study from India. So Malhotra, back in 67 studies, I forget I thought it was 17,000 railway workers. But it was a huge population. I don't know how big the number is, but it was a monster study, and it was dispersed very widely. And they looked into smoking, they looked into diet, they looked into stress, and they looked into other things, and they corrected for all of these things. And they found something odd in India at that time. The highest mortality was in the southern zone, and the lowest was in the north of India. And the strange part was that these were all railway workers. In other words, they were by and large in the same socioeconomic groups dispersed throughout the study. And yet, it turns out that the mortality was lower in the sedentary occupation of clerks than it was with the physically active occupation of sweepers and others who use their bodies. So it's the exact opposite of what you were told, that if you exercise a lot, you're going to reduce your risk of heart disease. You may feel better, you may lose weight, but you don't necessarily reduce your risk of getting a heart attack. Again, this is one study, but a very important one that you shouldn't ignore. What about other factors? So we talked about mortality and physical occupation. Turns out that the protective role of exercise is non-existent, according to this study. So you don't have to kill yourself anymore running at 6 in the morning. That's number two. And then he looks at other factors. And here's what he says. This is shocking. And here it is. Our data, however, do not support the association of high fat intake with the liability to develop heart disease, because while in the North, the consumption of fats, most of which are animal fats, is 19 times higher than in the South, the disease is 7 times less in the North than in the South. So where they eat more meat and fat, the disease is 7 times less frequent. So he couldn't understand it. So now he gets down to brass tacks. And he says, the study shows an inverse association of high intake of animal fat, a high intake of sugar, and freedom from heart disease in the Punjabi district of northern India, in contrast to a low intake of animal fat, a low intake of sugar, and a high frequency of heart disease in the South. It's the exact opposite of everything you've been sold by the pharmaceutical medical establishment. The exact opposite. So what is it related to? Well, it's related, I'm going to give you in a nutshell, to the amount of polyunsaturated fats, which are very, very dangerous. You see, you don't understand this, but those who eat high amounts of polyunsaturated fats actually have higher rates of heart disease for the chemical reasons I will describe in the next hour.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Less coast more. The absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Welcome to the Savage Nation. There's so much news, I'm not going to talk about it. The U.S. walked out on Hitler's speech today. Israeli delegation, no show for the Obama U.N. address. Wow, that's a big one. The clown who runs the U.N. says there's political polarization. No kidding, dope. Could you play Bobby Darin a little louder? I don't like it fading out. There's so many, you know, political stories that you've heard about already. So, Congress bans mentally retarded some cons behind the pub after getting gassed up on beer, and they arrest them. You hear this? They got Muslims screaming they're going to convert Buckingham Palace into a mosque. They're going to turn England into a Muslim nation, and they let him scream, but the white guys, the descendants of the people who actually built Britain. Oh, let me stop right here because I can't take it anymore. I really can't. Dems delay vote on tax cuts. What does that mean? What do you mean Dems delay? I'll turn it off for it. I can't. Senate Democratic leaders have decided to delay a vote on President Barack Obama's call to preserve middle-class tax cuts until after the congressional election in November. A spokesmouth for Senate Majority so-called leader Harry Reid said the Senate will return in November and work to extend the tax cuts for middle-income taxpayers. So they're not voting now. And that's because they know that they'll get hammered if they vote against this to extend it. It's, you know, political football. Rahm Emanuel is leaving the White House. He's going to run Chicago. David Axelrod is leaving the White House in order to rerun Obama's campaign in 2011. He'll have to, you know, refresh himself and read Marx, Engels, and others all over again and modernize some of the language. He'll have to get out some of his college textbooks. And that's why I was talking about heart attacks, because that's very personal for most of us. There's no one listening to the show who doesn't know someone who's had a heart attack or who died from a heart attack. And I don't think there's a person listening to the show who doesn't give it some thought at some point in the day of what they should eat or not eat, what to take or not to take. And most people are now brainwashed into taking very, very questionable, risky drugs in the cholesterol-lowering category. Because, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Let me tell you that right now. You start taking these powerful pharmaceutical chemicals, you are stressing your liver, as you well know, because even your quack doctor who puts you on Lipitor, even the quack will tell you you have to have your liver enzymes evaluated. Well, of course, that's another procedure that they can bill the government for, so that works hand in glove. And then, of course, they damage your liver. They give you another drug to make sure that another drug, it's endless. The drug mentality is endless. So wouldn't you rather know how to do some of this through diet? Well, I'm trying to tell you that there are some simple things you can do. So I was quoting a study from India that is from 1967. And say, oh, that's old stuff. That's old stuff. We want the modern science. Why, the modern science will show us the way. Unfortunately, there's very little modern science. Most of it is public relations funded by drug companies. That isn't to say that there aren't brilliant people in the sciences, but they know as well as I do that in order to get a grant, you've got to construct a study that will pass a grant review committee. And the grant review committee is living on the handouts of various special interests. And they're not going to fund a study which says that it could be related to diet, or it could be related to you take some vitamins and you can reduce your risk of a heart attack. Have any of you heard about? So I don't want to get too off the. So I'm not going to go through this thing for a whole hour now. I'm quoting a big study from India from 1967 because I remembered it. My friend actually found it for me yesterday, and he sent it to me. I couldn't believe that he found it. And they looked at various things. It was not related to smoking. It was not related to socioeconomic factors, not related to physical activity, not even related to stress and strain. They said none of the above have provided any tenable associations with the immunity from or reliability to develop heart disease in the data presented in this paper. Now, here's the killer. Nor is there any intraconvertible evidence that the total amount of fat in the diet bears responsibility for the production of this disease. Then he says, does it mean that these factors are not important or that they are less important than some others? And he asks the question. And he answers the question. And then he talks about the differences in the diets themselves and the physical differences in the fats that are consumed in the north as opposed to the south of India and the culinary practices in the north as compared with those in the south. And the people in the north of India at that time had a much lower rate of heart disease, even though in the Punjab district they used fermented milk products, they ate a lot of meat, while in the south Indians were largely vegetarian. You say, that's unbelievable. So the vegetarians had a higher rate of heart disease than the meat eaters and the ghee eaters? Yes, 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 1,000 times yes. So what's the answer? The answer is the relative length of the fatty acid triglycerides in the fats. Now you say, oh, what the hell did he just say? What did he just say? In plain English, those in the north eat foods that have a preponderance of short-chain fatty acid triglycerides. Those in the south consume vegetarian products, seed oils, in which there are long chains that are prominent. What does that mean if you're not a chemist? It's very simple. You don't even have to have gone to college. You could be at the same level as the wall banger and understand this. You could have gone as far in school as Rush Limbaugh and even understand this, by the way. And you can still learn something that may prevent a heart attack, even if you didn't go beyond high school. And I'm not trying to mock anybody. You know, I just do this for fun. What does it have to do with them? Well, my friend Peter Chowka, who was a health writer who I knew going back 30 years, I wrote him about this, and he sent me the article. I couldn't find it. And he said he called on an expert in this field to try to explain this to the average person, and here's what they came up with. I'm going to read it to you. The fatty acid content of the diet in North India versus the South most likely has something to do with the incidence of heart disease. It's similar to the Eskimo studies that came out around the same or slightly later. Now, let me pause right here. I remember reading when I was getting my PhD that the lowest rate of heart disease in the entire world was amongst Greenland Eskimos who lived almost exclusively on whale and seal blubber. I could not believe it because here I was obsessed with avoiding a heart attack. I didn't want to die young. I had young kids. I wouldn't touch an egg. I hardly ate meat. I weighed 130 pounds. I was running in the back of a valley. I was going to live forever because I knew not to eat fats and I knew to run. Well, at about age 30-something, I heard a voice screaming in my head as I was running up the back of a valley to a waterfall. Stop running, stop running, stop running. I thought I was going insane. I thought I was having a schizophrenia attack. It was a voice in my head saying, stop running. I never ran again. I never ran again. I bicycle. Yes, I bicycle almost every day. I love it. I enjoy it. But I don't bicycle to exhaustion. I bicycle for balance and for a certain amount of slight cardio. This whole concept of overdoing that, boy, oh boy, does that need revision. It is so alien to the human species to exert yourself to that extent at a certain age that I can't even begin to describe it because we've lost common sense. But in my own head, my inner mind said, don't run anymore. And I didn't. And you know, soon thereafter, a lot of guys I knew in their 30s who were as thin as I, who were as vegetarian as I was, or as close to vegetarian as I was, dropped dead of heart attacks. They were dropping like flies back in the 70s. A lot of the runners and a lot of the veggies. I couldn't understand it. No one could understand it. So when I read, as I was in graduate school then, that the lowest rate of incidence of heart disease in the world was amongst Greenland Eskimos, who at that time were consuming almost exclusively whale blubber and seal blubber, I said, this doesn't make any sense. It goes against the paradigm that I have been following. No eggs, no meat, no beef, no hamburger, no this. Watch out for the fat. It was like, oh, my God, that's the Holy Grail. I couldn't understand it. And then we looked into the diet of the Eskimo, and we found out that it was the type of fat they were eating. It wasn't the fat itself. Because whale blubber, you see, and seal blubber, you see, especially in those waters, is derived largely from the food that the whale and the seal are eating. The whale, as you know, eats plankton. And plankton is rich in certain kinds of fatty acids, which then wind up absorbed in the fat of the whale. So you see, it wasn't just the fat per se. It was the construction or the makeup of the fat that was more important than the type of fat. You follow what I'm saying? So when Bill Clinton comes out like he found something brand new and starts talking about he's on a pure vegan, vegetarian, and he thinks he's discovered the world, and that's because he's listening to an extremist from Sausalito, California, who's been peddling this bill of goods for 30 years to all the leftists in the world, and they believe him. But the evidence does not support this. If you wish to be a vegetarian for ethical reasons or for other health reasons, God bless you. But don't assume it's going to protect you from heart disease, is what I'm trying to tell you. So I'm going to go on now. The reason for the higher rates of heart disease in the South Indians with the high intakes of vegetable oil is that these are polyunsaturated fats with numerous double bonds. These double bonds are easily susceptible to oxidative damage, resulting in free radical formation and subsequent lesions to the blood vessels. Now listen to this. It is these lesions that start the whole process of plaque formation. The cholesterol just comes along and acts as a glue on the lesion, if there is one, and then begins to collect there along with calcium and other things. So in other words, even Linus Pauling, God bless him, wrote about this a long time ago when he was still alive. Cholesterol is actually a production of our body that's healthful. Our body produces cholesterol, which is intimately involved in many reactions in the body. But when your arteries become slightly damaged through oxidative damage and slight microscopic lesions occur inside the arteries, your body rushes cholesterol there like a glue to try to heal your artery to keep it from bursting. So it's actually a very good thing that it does that. The problem is that the cholesterol attracts calcium and it winds up causing the plaque, which eventually will occlude the entire artery. So let's go back for a minute, and I'll try to explain it in another way so it makes sense to those of you who couldn't follow this so far, and it's not that easy to understand. So the Indians in the South ate a lot of vegetable oil, and most of this vegetable oil consisted of polyunsaturated fats with numerous double bonds. What that means chemically is that these double bonds are easily attacked by oxygen and are easily oxidized, and that results in the production of free radicals, and those free radicals subsequently damage the blood vessels. So this goes back again to very simple solution in a way. Remember you heard the Mediterranean diet 30 years ago? Olive oil is not a polyunsaturated oil, nor is it a saturated oil. It's a mixed oil. It's got a mixture of polyunsaturated and saturated elements to it. So olive oil is possibly the most perfect of all of the oils. Of course, you want to make sure you're getting a good variety of olive oil and it's not rancid. And so I'll go into this in a little further detail here on the Savage Nation when I return.
Savage.
I went on essentially a plant-based diet. I live on beans, legumes, vegetables, fruit. I drink a protein supplement every morning, no dairy. I drink almond milk mixed
all right,
in
let's
with fruit.
I actually wish him well. I actually admire Bill Clinton for his change of life. I admire the fact that he went from being somewhat of a left-winger to a very wealthy man. He cashed in on his notoriety, which he should have. And that changed him for the better. And I'm glad that he's feeling good. I'm glad he lost weight. But I don't think he should have such false optimism based upon the so-called evidence that is provided by the special interests that want him to believe in the Holy Grail that simply going to this kind of plant-based diet is going to save him from any further problems. I mean, I wish it was true. But he should be taking massive doses of vitamin E. I hope he's doing that. I hope he's taking 1,000 IUs of vitamin E. I hope he's taking at least 1,000 milligrams of vitamin E. I hope he's taking at least minimum 50 milligrams of the B vitamins, especially folic acid. I mean, there's so many other things that he may not be doing because so many people are selling a single bill of goods. And I'm not selling you anything. I'm not going to make any money on what I'm telling you today, am I? What am I going to sell you? 10 books? 20 books of healing children naturally, 200, 1,000. What is it going to do? Change my life? I'm not selling you anything. I'm doing it for the common good. I'm a national treasure. I always have been. I am a national treasure. It's just that my politics have always been too conservative for me to have been recognized by the powers that be, whether it was my book, Plant a Tree, back in 1975, or in many of my other books. They were written for the common good. If I were a radical left-wing foaming-mouth Marxist, I would have been in the White House 30 times over, enjoying the benefits thereof, but I haven't been. I'm an outsider. And in some ways, it's a good thing because it keeps me on my toes and it keeps me honest. Denver, Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Michael. You were talking earlier about internalizing everything, and I do that. I'm just wondering how you don't internalize things because I love...
You know, I don't even have an answer for you because I cogitate on everything over and over again and things bother me, but somehow they don't cause any physical effects, Joe.
Me from thinking about stuff.
No, don't confuse thinking with worrying or getting sick. In fact, I would say think. More thinking is better than less thinking. That's the one thing I did want to tell you.
Savage.
All right, back to politics. Here's an article from Mail Online on Michael Savage. Three-year-olds are being labeled bigots by teachers as 250,000 children are accused of racism in once merry old England. Teachers are being forced to report children as young as three to the so-called authorities for using alleged racist language, it was claimed last night. More than 250,000 children in England have been accused of racism since it became law in 2000, the so-called Race Relations Act of the year 2000. Children are being spied upon down in nursery school. Teachers are now required to report incidents of racist abuse among children as young as three to local authorities. So that's what happens when you let liberals take over a country. England is no more. England has been destroyed by bending over backward to the Muslim hordes and to political correctness. As a result of this, the Trojan horse of liberalism has permitted the enemies of civilization itself to invade their country and threaten to topple it. And who they're attacking are the little children who may or say a word that offends somebody. That's exactly what happens with liberals. That's all the leftists do. Either you follow their beliefs or you're branded and punished. No room for any dissent. And if you don't rise up and throw these Democrat liberal socialists out in November, you deserve the totalitarian fascism that has emerged in the United States under Obama and his minions. See, I can do politics in the middle of coconut oil, by the way. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Ohio, Barbara, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I have a comment. I would like to know a little bit more about this epidemiology study far as the Indian foods, maybe what to avoid, what you should eat. My husband was a state trooper for 28 years.
Well, but I already told you the high levels of plant oils, polyunsaturated plant oils, was the only factor in the high rate of heart disease, according to this, the number one factor in this study.
Okay.
So what does that mean to you, right? Yeah. You want to know what that means.
Yeah.
Okay. Your husband had a heart attack?
No, he did not. He actually acted upon his symptoms very rapidly, went to the emergency room, got two stents put in. Actually, they were going to send us home, and he said, you know, I know there's something wrong with me, and I'm not going home.
And what was his diet for all the years preceding that occurrence?
Not real great. He, like I said, he was a state trooper 28 years, did a lot of Wendy's drive-thrus.
All right, well, we all know junk food is toxic, and you wouldn't feed junk food to your dog on a regular basis, right?
Correct.
Okay, so tell you that there's more to it than just avoiding fats. There's much more to it, and I can't describe it into a simple words. I can give you general principles, you know. Eat a healthier diet. What does that mean? Do what Bill Clinton's doing? No. That's only one aspect of it. Take 1,000 IUs of vitamin E. Make sure it's a multi... there's so much I can't even do this. It'll turn into an all-health show, and I don't want to do it. Vitamin C, vitamin E, the B vitamins, absolutely important. You want me to tell you another study, nothing to do with India? 1952, Harvard University, when it was still Harvard. When Harvard was still Harvard, before all of the degenerates got in there and destroyed it and turned it into a clown show, there were some amazing geniuses at Harvard. And one of them was a professor named McCulley. In 1952, McCulley did a study using rabbits. He said rabbits, the funny thing about rabbits is that their arterial system can be used as a model for the human arterial system. And so they put rabbits on certain diets, and they found out that the rabbits that were fed a diet totally deficient in vitamin B6, pyridoxine, rapidly developed hardening of the arteries. B6 was almost a indirect proportion to the development of atherosclerosis. And there's even a disease among some who age very rapidly. I think it's polyuria. I'm not sure the name of the disease. You've seen these poor individuals where children look like old people and their arteries actually age rapidly. And by the teen years, they're like a man 75. It turns out that they have a deficiency, an inability to absorb vitamin B6. So vitamin B6 is a big, big part of heart disease that has nothing to do with the study out of India, unless it's an associational aspect of it in some regard, because strangely enough, if the people in India who ate a lot of ghee and milk and fermented milk products were actually getting a lot of B6, and the vegetarians were getting almost no vitamin B6, but he didn't pick that up in that study. But it fits very, very neatly to the two things fit together. So take a multi-B vitamin, but please don't go for one-a-day vitamins. I love these studies that come out of the so-called place that killed Ernest Hemingway. The Mayo Clinic. And you hear Mayo Clinic. Oh, already. I call it the Mayonnaise Clinic. The reason I call it the Mayonnaise Clinic is because it's the mayonnaise of the health world. Doesn't mean that they don't do some great work in surgery or whatnot. But every study that the Mayo Clinic does that I've seen that Knox Vitamins does so specifically because they're in the grips of the pharmaceutical industry that wants to show that vitamins have no effect whatsoever or that they're harmful. I remember when Linus Pauling died. After he died, right away they did studies showing vitamin C had no value whatsoever. Then they showed vitamin E had no value whatsoever. But they were flawed studies. They were worthless studies. They used low dosages, which had no effect. And in the case of vitamin E, which they tried to show had no effect at all or that it was actually harmful, because remember, vitamin E is very cheap. It's a few cents a pill as opposed to these very expensive cholesterol-lowering drugs. What they were using was a very low dose of vitamin E, which was ineffective, and they were using a single tocopherol, alpha-tocopherol, when in fact you need at least 400 to 1,000 IUs of vitamin E, and it should be a high-quality mixed tocopherol vitamin E. There are some brands out there. I don't sell any of them. I mean, I probably should put out a lot. I'm not in it for the money. I mean, I could have put out vitamins. You know, do you realize if I was in it for the money, what I would have done by now, knowing that I have millions of listeners who hang on my every word who believe me? I would have already put out a line of vitamins. I would have put them out under my name if I was one of these handlers who was looking to make a quick buck. I'm not into it. I'm not into it. I mean, I wrote a new book called Trickle Up Poverty. That's the only thing I want you to buy. And I wrote it not to get rich. I wrote it to change the course of human history. I wrote it because I want the election to make sure that the Democrats are thrown out. And I wrote it so that by the time 2012 comes around and you're still walking around holding on to that book cover and it says it all, go on my website and see what the cover is. You have a walking billboard. I wrote it not to get rich. I wrote it to enrich America. Do you understand that? What happened at the UN today is unbelievable. Hitler appears. He's reincarnated. He used 9/11 insults. He says that the terror attacks were a U.S. plot. And the vermin in the UN start to applaud. And that's why I say, I mean, actually in my new book, I say close down the UN and turn it into a homeless shelter. I actually mean that. I believe the UN should be eliminated. I believe it should be turned into homeless housing. It would be put to better use to use the building at UN Plaza as homeless housing. There's no more evidence that I need than today. Ex-Air Force officers say that aliens are monitoring our nuclear missiles. This is a big story. The officers say they were sworn to secrecy but plan to break their silence about alleged incidents where UFOs surrounded nuclear weapon sites. Wow, that's a story. I know when the lines go jammed up, jammy on that. There's like three things you could say in radio. And you know, people don't understand radio the way I do. If you say certain things and the lights go on, I got a huge audience. No, it means you got a narrow audience of people obsessed with that topic. If I say guns and let's talk about reloading ammunition, I could talk about it 7 days a week, 3 hours a day, the lights would be on. If I say abortion, same. If I say UFOs, same. Aliens are monitoring our nukes, worry ex-Air Force officers. They're coming forward now, and there's a picture of one in the sky over Moscow, Russia in October of 2009, and we launched it up onto michaelsavage.com. On Monday, six former U.S. Air Force officers and one former enlisted man will break their silence about similar events at the National Press Club, all centering around unidentified flying objects and nuclear missiles. They urged the government to publicly confirm the incident, stating that they were ordered never to discuss the events. And so that's Captain Robert Salas was on duty on Montana in 67 when a UFO shut down the nuclear missiles on his base. He says so. So here we go again. I was on duty when an object came over and hovered directly over the site, Salas said. The missile shut down 10-minute manned missiles, and the same thing happened at another site a week later. Are they evidence of unknown military action from a foreign country, or are these extraterrestrial ET visitors? Salas thinks the answer is clear and finds it curious that they're so interested in our nuclear arsenal. And there are, I mean, you know, it's an interesting topic. What are you going to talk about? You abducted. I'm going to get the abductors now. Hi, this is Mike Bell. Welcome to Mike Bell's Overnight Show. I was out of my boat last night on the bay. and a strange white object hovered. It hovered right over Teddy and I. I can't say with any certainty that it was in a UFO or visitors from another galaxy, but I will tell you that 82% of those I polled who were on a plant-based, no dairy, no meat of any kind diet absolutely confirmed that they've been abducted and taken to the world of vegetarianism in Sausalito, California. Pittsburgh, Liz, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I want to know, why does the body crave salt?
Well, sodium is essential for most of our functioning. That's number one. Don't give up salt. You need your salt. The problem is how much salt you're taking, and we need about 1,000 milligrams of salt per day from all sources, which is what we get from foods without using the salt shaker. But any more than that, and you're going to wind up increasing your blood pressure. You know that, right?
Yes.
In fact, back in the late 60s, it was discovered that many folks in the African-American community were suffering from hypertension or high blood pressure, and it was directly related to the so-called, remember the day of the soul food? So-called, it was called soul food. A lot of the food that these individuals craved was rich in sodium, in salt, and it caused the hypertension. So people say, well, it's genetic. Well, what does genetic mean? I could take a perfectly healthy individual and put them on a high-salt diet and produce hypertension. Conversely, I can take someone who has hypertension and take them almost entirely off salt and reduce the hypertension. It's not a mystery, and increase the amount of potassium at the same time, by the way, Liz. So what is your question? Is it a little different than this, or did I answer it in any way?
Well, I actually grew up in Ireland, and I've been here in the States 20 years, and now the food here, I just feel like I need more salt on the food versus the food over there. It's so flavorful, and chicken tastes good, not like bland, blah, water.
Well, what you say, the original Irish diet was not very healthful, meaning when I say original. 50 years ago, the Irish were suffering a very high rate of heart disease. You know that, don't you?
No, I didn't.
Oh, yes. Ireland had one of the highest rates of heart attacks in the world 40, 50 years ago. It was a terrible diet. And, you know, it's no mockery of the Irish people. But the fact is that the cooking was terrible. It boiled out most of the nutrients. And it was a very, very narrow band of foods that was eaten in Ireland. And although the people are inherently and genetically strong as iron, their diet was just abominable. And it was only in recent decades that the Irish have sort of modified their diets in a more balanced manner. Salt does bring out flavor in food, Liz.
Yeah.
There's no question. Like, for example, Chinese restaurants that use monosodium glutamate, MSG, right? It's a flavor enhancer. And the reason they put MSG in the food is to bring out the flavors of the food, but it's not very healthful. So I would say to you, you probably grew up on salty foods, and therefore anything that you eat that isn't salty doesn't taste very good to you, right?
Could be it.
So what you do to avoid high blood pressure, Liz, and still get some taste is try to put spices on your food rather than salt. And then you'll get the little kick you're looking for in the chicken rather than the getting it out of the salt. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's got a way to spice up the chicken that you might like. For example, do you like curry powder?
No, actually I don't.
No, you're Irish. I'm sorry. The curry powder is very helpful, by the way. It's got curcumin or turmeric, which is a very good antioxidant. All right, my friend, I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to Mike Bell on Coastless and Restless. Coastless and Restless. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No coasts because I'm celestial. I'm intergalactic. I'm gelatinous, Manhattanous, sarcasticus, and I love animals. Mike Bell on Coastless and Restless. Last night I was out on my boat, as I say, and doing some rock cod fishing, minding my own business, when a large halo overtook the boat. A large halo overcame us, and before I knew it, I was absorbed into that halo, and I became coastless, and I coasted, and I flapped less, and I coasted more. I'm just having fun. What do you want? You want me to talk about Hitler? The Hitler of Iran and the UN? I won't do it. The secret blunder that sank the Titanic? Not interested. Amazing horned dinosaurs found on lost continent? Not interested. Aliens are monitoring our nukes, worry ex-Air Force officer. So what can we do about it? You know, if there are aliens monitoring our nukes, can they do something about Ahmadinejad? Can they please take him away already? Since the man's threatening to blow Israel off the map and setting off World War III. You know, if there really were aliens and they really were monitoring our nukes, they would have already taken Ahmadinejad with them and given him a nice curry in heaven where the 72 virgins await for him. They would have had a nice banquet already for him and the 72 virgins. Chicago, William on the Savage Nation, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I enjoyed your last bit. I've been listening to you for 14 years. Soon it'll be 15. And that art.
You see, I do have listeners who know me 15, 16 years. I didn't make it up. You've been listening since 1995. William, not all these years in Chicago, because I've only been on there for a few years. So you started where, in the Bay Area?
No, it's odd. I started listening way back in 96. First, I'd pick you up out of Atlanta. Then when it'd go out, I'd have to switch to New York. Then I'd have to switch to Virginia. And then I finally I got you on WIND, where I get you clear all the time.
But, I don't know. Because the UFO stories, I switched into a Mike Bell Coastless and Restless. I thought it would be funny. You never called a show before. I don't recognize your voice, right?
Oh yeah. You gave me one of your books the last time.
Well, it's your lucky day, and that is a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. You're getting on the list. You're one of the few and far between. When it comes out October 5th, you're going to get one of the first. Stay on the line. Guys, be sure to take the names of those who win the prize each day, because we're sending them on to the fulfillment house. We're going to start a very heavy campaign in 2 weeks of a lot of free books. So that he's one of the winners, no question about it. Yeah, it's been fun thus far in the Savage Nation. Tara Mom gets 86 years. Take a look at her beautiful eyes. The Pakistani scientist convicted of trying to kill American agents and troops. Take a look at her beautiful eyes. Take a look at the eyes of hate, the eyes of hell itself. Connecticut horror home invasion suspect chomping at the bit. Oh, I don't want to read about that story anymore. I got sick. Oh, this is a funny story. It came out Carl Palladino was almost within the shooting distance of Perry Como's son, Andrew Como, for the New York governorship. Now, all of a sudden, they come up with a fake survey the next day that shows Como's ahead of 33 points. Can you believe this? They have such power, the Democrats. They can control surveys. New poll shows Como with 33-point lead over Palladino. Look, I could see a survey that showed a 5-point lead or a 4-point lead. How did it come out the next day that he's got 33 points? Who did the study? You got to look, I'm a trained epidemiologist. Where was the study done? The Siena College survey. Now, I want to ask even the most biggest Democrat amongst you, do you actually believe that there's such a thing called Siena College? And that if there is such a college called Siena College, which I'm sure there is, that it has a survey that's valid? How in the world can you believe any of this? I mean, the Quinnipiac poll, whatever it is, Yippee-I-O-K-I, I can't even pronounce it. They should change their name. They should rebrand from Quinnipiac poll to something else, like whatever, the Queen's poll. But for God's sakes, the Queen's poll showed that Palladino was nipping at Perry Como's heels. Next day, 33-point lead.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The American people are speaking out like never before. They're concerned about the future of our nation and the future for their children. And they see a government in Washington that isn't listening, doesn't get it, and frankly, the American people think that Washington doesn't really care. We're here today to put forth a new governing agenda built by listening to the American people that offers a new way forward.
Pledge to America. The House Repubes released a doc today called The Pledge to America, 21 pages long. It was unveiled at a Virginia hardware store. And they're going to give these points, 21 pages, A Pledge to America, kind of a new version of the Contract for America. Remember that hokey thing that Newt Gingrich cooked up back in 94? Of course, the only thing that was actually passed from the Contract for America was the plank that took away money from welfare mothers. So on the whole, it wasn't too successful. It's strange to me that the Republicans' Pledge to America is coming out now just this week, because I, Michael Savage, read to you 10 points from the new book of mine, Trickle Up Poverty. My book has 37 points for saving America. And now the Republicans come out, and almost everything that is in my book, as God is my witness, is also in the Republicans' Pledge to America. It's not in the same order, and some of the key points are buried. For example, if you search the Republicans' Pledge to America, you have to go like page 15 to find anything about the borders. With me, closing the borders with Mexico is number one. You see, I'm not afraid of offending illegal aliens. There, the Republicans, that is, are trying to have it both ways. But many of the things the Republicans talk about, I agree with. Stop job killing, tax hikes. Well, who would disagree with that? They want to require congressional approval for any new federal regulation that would add to the deficit. Good. Cutting spending. Good. Repeal and replace health care, very good. My point number two in trickle-up poverty is defund and repeal Obamacare. That's a no-brainer. Another point from the Republican Pledge to America says roll back non-discretionary spending to 08 levels before TARP and stimulus. That's absurd. We're already bankrupt. And what's Michael Savage's point number six from my 37 points in trickle-up poverty? Liquidate TARP. It's amazing to me. Another Republican point, establish strict budget caps to limit federal spending going forward. This is right out of my book, I'm telling you. Most of this comes from trickle-up poverty. I'm proud to tell you that the Republicans robbed from me before. Bush stole compassionate conservative, and he got into the White House in that campaign. Thank me or hate me for it. And now they're stealing my entire plan for trickle-up poverty under their own name, which is good. Because as Lao Tzu said, it doesn't matter who gets credit for what you say or what you do, as long as what you say or what you do gets done. Here's another Republican point. Provide resources to troops. Who would argue with that other than Obama? Fund missile defense. Who would argue with that except Barbara Boxer? Enforce sanctions on Iran. Who would argue with that except Harry Reid? And so on. So if you read the Republican Pledge to America, it's very good advice. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with most of what's in there. It is fabulous. It's just too long. The American people don't have the attention span or the time to sift through 21 pages of material. If you want the condensed version, check out my 37 points for saving America and trickle-up poverty. It's been almost a month since we heard a word from the crazy Hollywood director Oliver Stone. And here he is. He's back.
And now, the Savage Nation Hollywood Idiot of the Day.
But listen to this.
America deserves deserves their leaders the way they pick them. So if she is president of the United States, God forbid, you know, we're in for a rocky road.
Rocky road.
Worse than Mr. Bush Jr., who you share same feelings I do with.
Yep,
he was stupid to begin with. We knew that.
Yep.
Let America find out. We'll go that way.
It's a rocky road, and he likes Obama.
I like Obama. I think he's moderate.
But this is the same who likes Chavez, dictators.
I think he's moderate, and he's smart, and he's trying to reform a system which is essentially glued up, and he's got tremendous enemies. So I'm rooting for him. I mean, it's either him or Palin or Bush.
Wait, Obama, Palin, or Bush? Repeat that?
It's either him or Palin or Bush.
Well, must be right if you say, Mr. Stoner. Well, no wonder your movies always seem to turn out as crazed left-wing fantasies.
I understand you cut out Donald Trump from the movie. Are you scared now?
Yes.
The only one he seems to be afraid of is Donald Trump.
No, I like Donald very much. He did a great job. He's a fun guy to have on the set.
It just didn't work in the script.
No, it was late in the movie. It became distracting because you're at those last 10 minutes of the movie. You want to move it. And all of a sudden, here's Donald in the middle of the picture. And he's larger than life, frankly. And, you know, you think about it.
Right.
I wanted to get to the resolution of the movie.
Speaking of Donald Trump.
You know, the president has been hammered lately. He's been asked some very tough questions. How much of the blame does he deserve for the current economy, as opposed to how much of the blame goes to those who gave him this current economy?
Well, I think everybody gets blamed, Wolf. I think he's having a hard time. I don't know if he's ever going to recover. I mean,
Will he not recover?
I look at him as a president that really is in trouble. I see what's happening in the country. There's a movement that I've never seen before, whether it's Tea Party or whatever. And I just don't know if anybody that's an incumbent is going to be able to recover unless they're really good and doing a really good job.
When you say not recover, what does that mean?
Well, that means recover and be elected.
Listen on to Mr. Rump.
You assume he's going to run in 2012 for re-election?
Assume. I do assume.
And you're not convinced he can win re-election?
I don't know if he can win re-election. I mean, I just see such hatred out there, such animosity out there, such, you know, when we see the taxes just going out, we see wars.
Hatred, animosity, taxes, and wars.
We see roadways going into Manhattan that are falling apart. And yet we're rebuilding Afghanistan.
Yeah, and we're rebuilding Afghanistan again?
And yet we're rebuilding Afghanistan.
You hear that? We're doing a great job in Afghanistan, but sorry about the United States of America.
You and I are old enough to remember 1994 when then-President Clinton suffered a huge
setback. Old enough to remember Clinton, but that wasn't the new Al Gore climate change version.
I went on essentially a plant-based diet. I live on beans, legumes, vegetables, fruit. I drink a protein supplement every morning, no dairy. I drink almond milk mixed in with fruit and a protein powder, so I get the protein for the day when I start the day out.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is hatred for this government.
The level of animosity, the level of almost hatred for our government is by our people is unbelievable, and I'm sure you've never seen anything like it, and I've never seen anything like it. So will he win? Will he run? Yes. Will he win? I don't know. It's getting, if you would have asked me that question a year and a half ago, I would have said, absolutely, he's going to run, he's going to win. But now it's just looking very bad, I think, for President Obama.
Never have I seen someone like Obama do so much damage to America in so little time. He really should resign. There's so little time. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We talked about health and nutrition as well in the Savage Nation. Here are some of the questions. Maybe you want to answer them yourself. Bill Clinton, the hamburger man, cheeseburger man, cigar man, has now suddenly embraced, like a religion, a plant-based diet. I have to ask you, is it possible for the leader of a major Western nation to function properly without eating meat? Now, he's not a leader anymore. And I don't think he functioned properly even when he ate cheeseburgers, but it's a good question. Conversely, do you feel that Obama's copious consumption of junk food and cigarettes contributes to his deranged leadership? And former vegetarians, what's the worst thing that happened to you as a result of going on a veg diet? If you've recently had a friend or relative become vegan or vegetarian, what did you notice that's different about them, other than they've turned green? What do you notice about the difference in diet between your conservative friends and your liberal friends? Is liberalism, at least in part, a dietary as well as a mental disorder? And is liberalism related to low blood sugar, low B6, low iron, low magnesium, low carnitine, or all of the above? Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan from what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. I want to read something to you about the humble potato for a minute, because you're going to see how political a potato can be. This is from Healing Children Naturally, page 124. Now, before I start talking about the potato and I say how political a food can be, do you know what happened in Ireland when the potato blight hit? Millions of people died, and millions of people had to emigrate to the United States and elsewhere, all because the potato crop failed. And the reason the Irish people have become so overly dependent on the potato is very interesting. Once a country becomes, or a population becomes, overly dependent on a monocrop or a single crop, they're asking for a disaster to occur, because when that crop becomes diseased or gets wiped out by some other sort, you know, like climate change, for example, which has happened, the people usually die off. So I'm going to read this to you. You ready for this? One paragraph, potato, an ideal children's food. Undoubtedly, the most important tuber or root crop in the Western world is the potato, which has served as a staple food since the Spanish brought it back from the Andes of South America. This gift of South American Indian ingenuity soon became so successful a food that it made the 18th century population explosion in Europe possible. Do you hear how political that food is, a humble potato? A good source of vitamin C, iron, and protein, the potato is an ideal starchy vegetable for children. Remember to cook potatoes in their skins and to serve them in ways that permit the skins to be eaten, since much good food fiber and minerals are contained in them. Some cases of severe malnutrition among children who cannot digest milk and dairy are treated successfully with potatoes, which provide a high-quality digestible protein. Other starchy root vegetables are important staples in other parts of the world. The cassava plant, for example, is the source of tapioca, an easily digested starchy food that can be used in puddings, bread, and as a thickening agent. Another tropical tuber, the taro root, is used to make the Polynesian staple known as poi, and is even eaten like the potato in Japan. One last note on the potato again. If I'm saying you should eat the skin, well, unfortunately, the potatoes today are sprayed with maleic hydrazide. I think they're still using it as a it prevents sprouting, which I'll never understand. If I buy garlic, I want to see sprouts on my garlic, because it means the garlic hasn't been sprayed with maleic hydrazide or other cancer-inducing chemicals. What's wrong with a sprouted garlic? So you eat the sprout on the garlic. Most people certainly wouldn't eat a potato that has roots sticking out of it. But you want to try to get organic potatoes if you're going to eat the skin. Very important, particularly for your children. And while we're talking about children's diets, I want to say this. It's very important for you to hear this. Too many people are obsessed with low-fat diets, and they're killing their children. They're putting kids on these anemic diets, and the children are very anemic and sickly as a result. I can talk to you from today until next year, and you're not going to believe me, because you're brainwashed, and you think that your kid needs, you know, low-fat, low-cholesterol foods. Well, I'm not telling you to take them to McDonald's every day, but you need some balance here. Children are growing. They're supposed to have high-fat diets at some points in their life. They're supposed to have high-protein diets at some point in their life. And I want to remind you again, in case you don't know it, we are designed to eat meat. We're designed to eat fish. We're designed to eat animal flesh, in essence, along with vegetables. How do I know that? Because if you study simple anatomy, let's start with carnivores like a dog or a lion. Carnivores have large teeth for ripping and tearing flesh, and they have short guts because it's a very small transit time. Animals that are herbivores, like a cow, which doesn't eat meat or animal flesh, they have very, very long convoluted guts because they grind up the grains. The grains take a long time to transit through the body. They need a long time to digest. Consequently, their guts are very long. In the middle are the omnivores, like us. We have mid-sized guts. We have some canine teeth and some teeth for grinding, starchy grains and vegetables. We're designed for meat. We're designed for fish. We're designed for some chicken. Now, that does not mean you can't get rid of all of these animal proteins if you wish, and if you know how to balance foods, you can do it. Many people do. They're very happy and they live well. But it's very tricky to balance vegetarian diets. Many of the girls today are on these obsessive, I'm a lacto-ovo-vegetarian. They're anemic, they're depressed, they're hysterical, because they're not getting iron, they're not getting B6, they're deficient in B12, and they're hysterical because they're starving to death. They don't even understand this. And you look at the men in America. Why do you think so many men are impotent or they can't have children? It's related in many cases to these horrible diets that they're on. And I remember when I was in nutrition practice, I'll never forget this famous story. I think this woman. I won't even mention her name. I think it was a scandal. Someone threw her off a cliff. I think we all know who. I won't go any further than that. I remember I once had a nutrition practice for a short period of time in a medical office here in Sausalito, California. Okay. Woman comes in. She's depressed. She's tired, fatigued. She can't go to the bathroom very well. I say to her, well, what kind of diet are you on? She says, well, I'm a vegetarian. I said, really? And what kind of food does your husband eat? She says, well, he owns a winery. And she said, oh, he eats terribly. I said, what does he eat? She said, oh, it's terrible. He drinks a lot of red wine. He eats lots of meat and potatoes and vegetables. I said, what shape is he? And she's very, very vigorous, very healthy. I said, would you do me a favor? Would you eat like your husband does for 3 days? She was shocked. She said, but I'm a vegetarian. I said, well, I don't care. I mean, you asked me to help you. You came to me. I didn't come to you. So go home and eat like your husband for 3 days. She comes back a week later. She couldn't believe it. She said, I'm cured. I can sleep. I feel good. I didn't know that I was deficient in eating. I said, well, okay, congratulations. You know, I got to tell you, a lot of people listen to this show who you would never expect. I don't know where they listen. People listen on the internet a lot. A lot of talk radio has gone to internet listening. You know that I found that if someone Googles Michael Savage while the show is on, they get it off a station in Cincinnati. They're not even listening to it on a radio station, which is an amazing fact unto itself, which I'll talk about in another time where radio is going altogether. Hey, Savage Nation, this is Michael with an urgent message about the economy. Listen, there's been a lot of talk about the dangers of inflation, of deflation, of a double-dip recession, even the possibility of a depression. We now have mainstream economists warning that our whole economy, our liberty, on the brink of collapse. I think most people are completely confused by it all, but I've discovered a report that helped me understand what's about to happen. It's entitled Spiraling into a Greater Depression. I want you to get your free copy now. How? By calling 1-800-289-2646, 1-800-289-2646, or online at libertyisgolden.com. Visit libertyisgolden.com. I repeat, the answers to this crisis are all covered in this free report, Spiraling into a Greater Depression. And as a bonus, I'm going to include a free pocket constitution, which I think every American should reread before the November election. Call now, 800-289-2646, 1-800-289-2646, or visit libertyisgolden.com, libertyisgolden.com. It's a message from me to you. Get it.
Call Michael now at 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
The guy who trains martial arts all his life, imaginary foes, comes up against a gangbanger who shoots him in the head before he can go into, hey! He's dead. That's why I never got into martial arts, because I figured there was always a lunatic with a gun. Put your hands up. And he just slashes your throat. You get overconfident there. Look what happened to a lot of these guys. I mean, it's a good exercise and all that. Hey! But the street fighter already pulled out a gun and cut his throat. Fifteen years ago, I had a health show for 1 hour a week. It was such a hit, but you can't believe the questions you would get. Dr. Savage, I want to tell you, I can't. I go to the bathroom, I stand over the bowl for minutes, nothing comes out. Oh, like that. For hours this go on. It was so awful. People's bodily functions, yuck. I don't even like my own bodily functions, never mind a stranger's.
Savage.
This is Michael Savage. I want you to know that freedom of speech is not free. Believe me, courageous radio stations like this one want your advertising dollars to pay their bills and be able to bring you my show and all the others you've come to depend on for the real truth. Talk radio in many ways is America's immune system, but it needs your booster shot. If you're a business, you need to put your money where your heart is. Advertise on this station. And here's the good news. According to Talkers Magazine, ads airing on talk stations like this one generate 2 to 3 times the response from customers than other radio formats would generate. Why? Because talk radio listeners support with their dollars the advertisers that support the radio shows that they love. If you're a business, any kind of business, I don't care if you're a roofer, a plumber, advertise on this station. If you're a listener, do business with the businesses that advertise on my show and others on this station. For more information on how you can buy ads on this station or my show, call 877-474-6605. Write it down, 877-474-6605.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world where children don't play, or dream, or imagine.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to stq.org.
Do you want to experience the full impact of the Michael Savage Show? Become a premium member and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcasts. Now you can take the Michael Savage Show anywhere and listen whenever and wherever you want. Get hooked up with the Michael Savage Show today. Go to www.talkradionetwork.com. That's talkradionetwork.com. Click on Savage's picture and sign up now. Savage.
The best network marketers in the world all desire three things from their new MLM opportunity. Products that dial into an untapped global phenomenon, to call on their MLM talents and get the good life fast, and to join early so they can quickly enjoy their dreams. Only top MLM professionals can join our new company now. Before we launch, we need top network marketers who can optimize the leads from our radio campaign to an audience of over 30 million. If you are a proven MLM professional who has earned six figures and achieved top ranks in other MLM companies, act now. Send a text message to 74499 and type MLM in the body of the message. These elite positions will go fast. Send a text message to 74499 and type MLM in the body of the message. Again, send a text to 74499 and type MLM in the message. Message and data rates may apply.
The Obama administration has made it clear that they're willing to have open talks with the dictatorship in Iran, while ignoring the danger that a nuclear Iran brings not only danger to Israel, but the entire Western world. The crazy psychotic from Iran is in New York City to speak in front of the UN. And, of course, the Obama administration welcomed him with open arms. Joining us now is the author of They Must Be Stopped and the president of Act for America, Brigitte Gabriel. Brigitte, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Glad to be back with you, Michael.
What do you see happening here?
Well, I am watching this charade happening at the UN in New York, and the more I see news coverage about it, the more disgusted I am. Not only with the UN, but with us as a government, to allow these thugs who mostly hate our guts, vote against us most of the time, to have a platform to speak to the world right from our soil, protected by our scarce tax dollars right now.
So what do you feel we should do about the UN, other than leave it?
We just need to take the UN and ship it somewhere else, Michael, away from America. The UN has served a purpose when it was first founded. But now, it has become a reunion base for third-world corrupt leaders and thugs who parade on our soil, empowered by the respect we give their title as leaders. It elevates them on the world stage and emboldens them when they see thugs-in-chief like Ahmadinejad, who continuously defies the United States, get away with their bad behavior. It inspires the others to follow in his footsteps, knowing that there will be no retaliation for their bad behavior. Iran is determined to have nuclear bombs. We have already exhausted words, sanctions, blah, 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 since 2003. Nothing has worked. The mullocracy in Iran is driven by an apocalyptic vision of ending the world and ushering in their Islamic Messiah.
Well, where did their apocalyptic vision come from, and when did it start?
The Iranian government was the first in our modern age to develop a jihadist army. They adopted a long-term political strategy using Islamic ideology as their base. Militarily, Khomeini looked at Lebanon in 1982 and saw 11 Islamic terrorist organizations operating separately. He combined them into a proxy army called Hezbollah, the Party of Allah, which has now committed terrorist attacks on four continents. Iran also looked at the enemies of the United States, specifically Russia, China, and North Korea, and began building alliances. The Iranians, who are Shiite Muslims, have never garnered the respect of the rest of the Islamic Sunni world. They feel they have been shortchanged by the Sunnis and deprived from the respect they deserve as the proper descendants and bloodline of Prophet Muhammad. What's infuriating them even more is that parts of the Islamic world in general, And Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan in particular have partnered with America, the great Satan, and even worse, two of these three countries have signed a peace treaty with the devil itself, Israel. Not only do the Iranian Shiites feel slighted, but they also feel they can play a central role in the future of Islam's domination over the world. They have an apocalyptic belief that they can have a direct hand in ushering back their Islamic Messiah called the Mahdi, or the 12th Imam. This Mahdi will cause Islam to become the supreme religion of the world.
This is unbelievable to me.
Now, Jews, Christians, and Muslims all believe in a Messiah, but it is the Iranians who are obsessed with the idea of his coming. Official Iranian radio and television aired a series about the return of the Mahdi last year. The series detailed the imminent appearance of a messianic figure who will defeat Islam's enemies and impose Islamic Shiite rule over the entire world, even speculating on specific dates the so-called Mahdi will come. All of Iran is buzzing with excitement and anticipation.
And what was the title of that show?
The program was called The World Toward Illumination. Here are some quotes from the program. "Be joyous, my heart. Miracles of the Messiah will soon be here. The scent of breath of the one we know comes from near. Grieve not of sorrow, as assured I was last night that a Savior will come, it's clear. After the coming of the Mahdi, liberal democratic civilization will be found only in history museums."
No.
I continue quoting the program. Quote, "In short, when he reappears, peace, justice, and security will overcome oppression and deceit, and one global government, the most perfect ever, will be established." End quote.
Unbelievable.
All of Iran is buzzing about the Mahdi, the 12th Imam, and the role Iran and Ahmadinejad are playing in his anticipated return. There is even a Mahdi Messiah hotline where people can dial in and hear the latest about his imminent return. There are news agencies especially devoted to the latest development.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
Now, while we think this is absolute craziness and delusions, Michael, for them, it cannot be more real. It is so real they can feel it. They can taste it. They are waiting. Businesses are preparing for the return of the Mahdi. Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, called on Muslims last year in neighboring countries to intensify preparation for the coming of the Islamic Messiah, the Mahdi. He specifically urged Muslims to mobilize forces to defeat the United States and Israel. He said, and I quote, "We have to train honest forces that can stop the obstacles that may hinder the coming of the Mahdi, like the United States and Israel," end quote.
How could this be going on?
With the development of modern weapons of war, the waging of jihad is far more effective. The leaders of Iran, who look for a worldwide apocalypse as a prelude to the return of the 12th Imam, know that a nuclear attack against Israel will begin the domino effect required to prepare the way for the Mahdi or the Islamic Messiah. It will give Iran an immediate leadership over the Ummah, or the Islamic nation, worldwide. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan, who have put their eggs in America's basket, will be brought into submission by Iran. The Shiites will finally have their rightful place in the leadership of the Islamic nation, as it was supposed to be after Muhammad's death as his bloodline. This will correct the wrong done to them by the Sunnis for centuries and usher in the Shiite Messiah, who will reign supreme in a new world where Islamic laws will govern and justice will be brought to the world.
Well, they're not hiding their intentions to anyone who knows what's going on.
Our government must understand the apocalyptic visions of the Iranian mullah regime and why they must be stopped now. While we cannot control what they are doing, Michael, we can and we must develop with urgent speed a plan to stop Iran's nuclear program. When the mullahs and Ahmadinejad talk about a new world order from Iran, it is not a threat, it is a promise.
But there's no signs that this administration understands this threat, are there?
There is absolutely absolutely no sign whatsoever, Michael. The Obama administration is burying its head in the sand and not reacting at all. Look what happened when Obama first became elect president. His first video address was to the Iranian people, congratulating them on their spring holiday. His second television address was to Al-Arabiya television. Even through the riots in Iran, he reached out and he continued saying the Islamic Republic of Iran, something that no other president prior to President Obama has ever referred to this subject like that. Instead of empowering the Iranian people who were rising against the theocracy in Iran, he basically was addressing the mullahs in his mind, thinking they're going to listen to him, and if he just extends the respect to them, they're going to respect him back and negotiate with him on the nuclear Iranian program. And all he got, basically nothing more than ridicule for the last 19 months since he was president. They are not listening, and President Obama, with his arrogance, is not realizing how far down the road they are in developing nuclear bombs.
And the rest of the world, they're not reacting to this new Hitler.
Nobody in the rest of the world is paying attention. Everybody's looking at America to see how America is going to react, because America is the superpower of the free world. You're not going to expect Russia to react, because Russia is already in the pockets of Iran. You're not going to expect China. You're not going to expect North Korea. But France, Britain, and New Zealand, Australia, Canada are all waiting to see how America is going to react, because after all, America is the only superpower with the military capability to be able to stop Iran. And only America will have also the power to impose the sanctions in a powerful way that only America can enforce. The rest of the world are only smaller countries. Yes, they are democracies. Yes, they have military. Yes, they can bring their coalition to America in trying to do whatever America needs to do in spreading freedom around the world. But they cannot spearhead this movement, and as well, they cannot basically do anything unless America takes the leadership role, and that's when they're going to come on board and they're going to follow.
Where can we read more?
For those who are interested in more details about this issue, they can find it in my book titled They Must Be Stopped. You can also go to actforamerica.org and sign up to receive our important alerts. The time, Michael, for blah, 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 blah coming out of the White House is over. The time for real men to make real decisions is right now. And America is the only leader in the world who can lead the world to stop Iran from a nuclear disaster.
Thanks for the report, Brigitte.
Thank you, Michael. Glad to be with you and look forward to next time.
Until this or any other administration takes the threat of Iran seriously, Israel, America, and the rest of the Western world really is sitting there waiting to be hit. These open talks with everything on the table are producing nothing but a more emboldened Iran, and it will soon be too late. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here are the headlines on MichaelSavage.com. One of them is a heartbreaker. Seven elephants killed by a train in India. I can hardly read it. You won't believe this story. A herd was crossing the tracks. Two calves got stuck in the tracks. The baby elephants were sitting there crying to their parents. Okay? In northern India. What happened was the adult elephants went around them and tried to help them. The train hit them. Five elephants died immediately on the track. Two others succumbed to their injuries on Thursday morning. As I said, the adult elephants had crowded around the stricken baby calves to protect them when they were hit. The two calves were among the dead. This is unbelievable. Listen to the rest of this. The surviving members of the elephant herd were still at the scene in the morning, watching over the dead and injured. Can you believe this? There's so much to this story. I mean, if you're not an animal rights activist at this point, I don't know when you could be. And I still eat meat. Terror mom sentenced to 86 years in prison. Finicky fascist food stinks up hotel. That's your good friend Ahmadinejad. Swedish voter bellwether as Europe moves to the right. Oh, you didn't hear about that one? In the popular imagination, Sweden is to the left. Well, they're voting in right-wingers to get rid of the Muslims who are taking over their country. Obama seeks divine intervention on health care reform. He's going to need it. A panhandler got $250,000 after a cop got into a fight with him. Two are charged with a hate crime for beating up a white teenager, a Muslim, and another man beat up a 16-year-old white boy, taunted with racial insults, burned with a lit cigarette, and punched. Finally, on the bottom of michaelsavage.com, take a look at the new death chamber at San Quentin. It's all there and more right on michaelsavage.com. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. 1-800-449-8255. San Francisco. Esther, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
We have all your books in our clinic. We've been resourcing you for many years, and especially the immigrants in epidemics. And we're always very excited when you talk about nutrition. So just like keeping the country healthy and safe, you have to do the same thing with your body.
Esther, let me ask you, what type of clinic are you referring to?
You mean my clinic?
Yes.
I'm co-owners in a holistic preventive medicine clinic.
Isn't that wonderful? And I'm interested. I have not been in the field for so long. I used to know all the great guys in it. How is that business doing? That whole because the government doesn't pay for any of that. Obamacare won't pay for holistic medicine, will they?
Well, we go back to your day in the 70s and 80s. We have a common friend, Dr. Cathcart and Dr. Morgan.
Oh, God, was he was a giant. I love Bob.
And it's a great loss, but he goes on, and he goes on through you, and the work will always be valuable. Even a decade, two, three from now, your work will always be valuable because this is what we need as a people to stay well and prevent cancer, prevent degenerative disease. It's the new paradigm, don't you agree?
Oh, why do you think I've been involved in it for so long? I still agree. You know, you mentioned Dr. Cathcart, who was a fabulous human being in addition to being a genius as a physician. But, of course, he was a colleague of the great Dr. Linus Pauling. What's intriguing to me is that after Dr. Pauling died, the man was a giant. All the Lilliputians in the medical field tried to deconstruct Pauling's great work, and they ran fraudulent studies, as you well know. For example, the Mayo Clinic, I lost all respect for the Mayo Clinic when I saw that they ran fraudulent studies, for example, on vitamin E. What they did was they used dosages that were far too low, and they only used alpha tocopherol rather than mixed tocopherols, and they ran it for too short a period of time to get any results. Then they said vitamin E has no effect whatsoever. And I saw the Mayo Clinic doing this over and over again, because my belief is the Mayo Clinic is in cahoots with the drug establishment. Would you concur with that, Esther?
I would totally agree with that. I've been involved with medical heretics for a number of decades now, and I know that if you can't patent it and you can't sell it in some way, shape, or form, it's not going to be the preferred treatment, and that's so sad for our people.
It is. Absolutely. And you know what's intriguing, again, to me, is that President Obama, let's put aside his politics for a minute, wouldn't you think that he and Michelle, being younger people, would be in favor of alternative medicine, especially since they pushed through the socialized medicine of Obamacare? Wouldn't you think they'd want preventive medicine of this nature to be widely publicized in the country?
Well, I think that's why Alice Waters is mad at them, because they have sweet potatoes planted in their garden that are fully grown just for the photo op.
Yeah, and I have to say, and I don't say it because I want to be a wise guy, Michelle Obama lectures us about healthy eating, and then she's seen eating ice cream every time they go on vacation. Have you noticed that, Esther?
It's not even a good quality ice cream. I mean, you can eat ice cream, but it doesn't have to be full of all the GMO materials and homogenized level dairy. I mean, you can eat ice cream.
Well, no, I think it's kind of hypocritical myself. But let's get back to this. I appreciate it, Esther, that you have my books, and thank you for calling the show. I think I'm going to devote myself entirely to animals and animal rights. There's nothing else out there. The rest doesn't make sense to me. They're so innocent. Yes, I eat meat. Please leave me alone, but I love my dog. What do you want from me? It's hypocritical, I recognize. Somehow when I see an elephant, I don't want to eat elephant meat. When I see a whale, I think it should be protected. I mean, there are certain species that are different than others with regard to their sensibilities. I mean, cosmically, a mosquito is the same as an elephant. It's DNA, I understand that, with a certain, you know, combination. In a sense, there's no difference between a mosquito and you if you're a Democrat. But that's because you're a Democrat and you're an atheist. I'm not an atheist. I think there's a difference between myself and a mosquito personally. But the point I'm making is, yes, all animals are theoretically DNA and their own specific type of DNA. But there are differences in terms of, you say, well, is it just the size? Why do we feel sympathy when an elephant goes down? Why do we want to protect the Sumatran tiger that is being decimated by the vermin in Sumatra who are killing them for some reputed masculine enhancing powers in China with the lunatics in China who don't have enough with Levitra? And why don't you just give everyone in China Valium and stop it? I mean, what is it called? What's the one, the male enhancement drug? I don't even know the name of it. Isn't it with the V Viagra, right? I said Valium is the opposite, shows you. Instead of letting them kill tigers to take out their glands to give to the losers in China who can't, you know, just give everyone free Viagra and Levitra over there. Free Levitra for everyone in China who needs it. I'll put up a certain amount of money so they stop killing tigers. Wouldn't you? Why should we inherently protect the Sumatran tiger when we have millions of dogs and cats killed around the world? Why do we protect the elephant and the mountain gorilla when we have millions of cats and dogs that look at you with the little sad eyes that we euthanize? Why, oh, why, oh, why? I mean, and there is a difference, I guess, between a whale and the catfish.
Savage.